Hi, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Kingdom Lives Podcast. Today we have a special episode for you titled New Age to New Testament. This is the testimony of a dear friend of ours, Stephanie Minner. Stephanie shares her story about her life and how she walked a path of promiscuity and wandered into the world of New Age and all of the mythos that is involved in it. She touches on the dangers and power involved in the deceptively attractive avenues within the New Age. This life she built in the New Age led to the scales being removed once Christ revealed himself as the one true path to all things this life is promising. Her story is an incredible account of how our life can be redeemed and restored, regardless of who or where we came from. Listen to this powerful testimony and share this with anyone who needs to hear this powerful experience. All glory be to God.
All right. Well, my name is Stephanie Minner. I go by Stevie. I've gone by Stevie my whole life. My mother and father, they named me Stephanie. My mom wanted to name me Stevie, but after Stevie Nicks. And they divorced when I was two. So despite my dad wanting me to stay Stephanie, my mom always called me Stevie. And so she raised me. And I already had like my father not part of my life. And then from two to about four, it was just my mom and I. We were living with relatives, you know, she was just single momming it. And then she met my stepfather, Butch, whom she married. And they had my brother, who was 7 years my junior. So at seven, they had my brother, and life was just kind of me and her and then him and my brother, Trevor. And then 2 years later, I was at my cousin's house. I was hanging out just with my cousin and her older brother, my older cousin. He had pulled me into his room. We were playing hide and seek, and he had pulled me into his room, and he had a magazine. It was an adult magazine, and there was a bunch of pictures on it, and he asked me to pick one, and we're playing hide and seek, and my cousin, who's 3 months difference in age, and my, you know, we're younger, she doesn't know where we're at. I'm seven. I'm in with my older cousin, and I feel kind of obligated to pick one. And so I picked the one that I think is the least invasive based on what I knew about my body at that point. And that's the act we participated in. And so that was my first understanding of cousin male sexual interaction. So I just kind of thought it was normal and okay, and it was no big deal. And I was promised not to say anything, but I still felt like that was remotely inappropriate. So I did go and I told my mom, started a huge fight between her and her sister. But my mom believed me, and that was important. My mom believed me. And so when it happened again, this time with my stepfather, the man whom she had married, not even months later, I knew to tell her. So I told her, and it just started that really begins everything, because she kicked my stepdad out of the home. So now this became this like volatile environment where my mother is working three jobs. She's not home, because she's trying to provide for my brother and I, neither of whom's father is paying child support. And I'm nine at this point, and I don't understand why my dad did something wrong. I don't understand why he had to leave. So it just like started this whole sort of issue with me wanting male attention and love. Like, it was gone, you know? The relationship with my cousins was broken, so now I didn't have them. And it's like, no matter what I did, I was always wrong. I was always breaking up the family because I kept on telling about things that I wasn't supposed to tell about. And it just synced back to these men who participated in things with me because they loved me. And now these men that loved me are out of my life. So From 9 to 12, it was really difficult. My mom was raising us on her own, multiple jobs. My grandmother would come and watch us. And I rebelled a lot even then because I didn't understand why my mom did what she did. I didn't understand why she was gone all the time, why she divorced my dad, all these things. It really weighed on my mom a lot because she blamed herself that she married a man that would do that to their daughter. And then she's gone all the time. And so all while that's happening, she's trying to get me plugged into these different churches. So I started going to like an Assembly of God church with like our local youth group. She herself was involved in first the Mormon church because even though she didn't necessarily feel that all the beliefs were the same, which she would later tell me as an adult, they had community down. And her being a, you know, newly single and a sober woman who didn't want anyone to touch her children, she knew that that was kind of a good community to be a part of. You know, they were very rule following and conservative. So she went from that to Catholicism, where to this day she's still a practicing Catholic. But I was plugged into all these different avenues of church because she was just trying to give me what she could, you know? And so I was going to youth groups. I was going to Catholic Mass. I was baptized both in the Assembly of God Church as well as where I, like, I saw speaking in tongues and I saw slain in the spirit. I myself was slain in the spirit. To this day, I could not tell you to which camp was working. I don't know. But I had experienced and seen and tried to thrust myself into fitting in with all these different groups. And then on the opposite end, I was going through communion and Eucharist and the catechism with the Catholic Church. And I was baptized there. Again, I think my mom was just trying to put me in any sort of position she could to understand that there is a Savior and I've really messed up as a mom, but please, I hope that, you know, I can salvage your salvation, you know? So I never took any of those to heart. I was still kind of rebelling about not having physical attention because at that point I just believed that that's what I wanted, you know, from a male. And so from 9 to 12, during that time frame of all these youth groups and Catholicism and stuff, I just went with the motions. I didn't really care. But I think the seed was planted. I do. Because Jesus wasn't a foreign idea. So at the age of 12, my mother suffered a nervous breakdown at work. She tried to kill herself with the security guard's weapon. I think she just couldn't handle that all these things that she had suppressed from her own childhood had come now to happen to her daughter. And so she was locked up, taken away. And then from that moment, from 12 till about 16, I was in and out of group homes and foster homes. Not foster homes like you see nowadays with like a parent. It was definitely staff. You had like 12-hour shifts. I was very institutionalized. So it was very kind of matter of fact for me. You had your moments that you would, you know, talk with your fellow cohabitants there about how they were molested and how they had. I had a cellmate one time who had killed a woman over a $5 bill in her purse. I mean, so this was my normal childhood from 12 to 16, was living in environments with children who had been severely traumatized or molested or raped. And sadly, in those environments, because they were like two-story dilapidated buildings that we lived in underneath overpasses. I mean, it was very like, I don't even know how to explain it. It was owned by the state. It was run down. You just had staff. There was no parental anything. So sadly, in those environments, a lot of molestation and rape still occurred. And if I'm being completely honest, I believe that on my part, and I held this as, I mean, the enemy used this a lot against me. I felt like different from everybody because I actually wanted it. It was always consensual with me. No matter how deviant or multiplied it was, it'd be multiple partners, it'd be like gang rapes. You hear of that. I never felt like the victim though because I wanted that. I was seeking someone to show me the affection that I first felt, the first intimacy I ever felt, that someone was interested in me, even if it was my family members. You know, like that's what I wanted. So these you know, looking back, my gosh, it sounds so filthy and so dirty, but I wanted it. I craved it. I craved that attention. And that was my lifestyle from 12 to 16. So then my mom would be in and out of these facilities, and I just rebelled. I would run away. There would be like weeks at a time that I could go live back with her because she was home, but she was struggling with alcoholism and all these she was fighting all these demons against herself because she felt so badly about what had happened to me that she just wasn't present. She couldn't be present. And so I would run away. It's nuts to think about. So it's just, these are just like snippets, but I was on all sorts of medication. I was diagnosed bipolar and manic depressive and borderline schizophrenic. I mean, I had all the labels. I had all the medication that went with it. I would sell it. I would give it away. I would, in a lot of these homes, you'd kind of give stuff to the head honchos so that you didn't get in trouble. So like some of the girls were really intimidating, and I would either have to do sexual favors with them, or I would give them my Prozac, my pills, so that I wouldn't be beat up. I mean, it's gnarly when I think about it now, but that's all I knew. So I just assumed that that's like everybody's childhood, you know? So, oh yeah, beat up, I have a story. Like, you just assume that that's everybody's childhood. And so at 16, I was awarded the opportunity to live in apartment living. And so I was living in apartment living by the state. I took a school bus to and from summer school for 10 hours. It was long, long days for that whole summer, but then I ended up graduating early at the age of 16. And I wasn't technically emancipated. I think my mother still somewhat, she never gave up the rights. And what's beautiful is I didn't find that out till about a year ago. I always thought that my mom had given me over to the state, but she didn't. She didn't. You know, and so it was a beautiful, it's one of the things, you know, when you fast forward in your walk with the Lord, he reveals things and you realize that you were wrong all along, holding on to so much resentment and rebellion. She never gave me up. It's just this state-run program felt that I was okay to be on my own, and my mom was not in the capacity at that time to take care of me. So while I wasn't emancipated, I was certainly able to kind of be on my own. And at the age of 16, because I was on my own, I started to make even poorer decisions, but now with a group of people that were driving, and, you know, I had accessibility to a lot more. So in addition to this promiscuous lifestyle, now I've added the criminal piece. And so I stole a vehicle in an attempt to run away out of this group home that I was living in, where I was being raped, like where these things were happening. And I was fighting that dichotomy of like, well, did I bring this upon myself? Do I like this? Why do I like this? What's wrong with me? Because you start to get older and you realize you're not like the other girls who, despite their troublesome childhood, like they don't crave it. A lot of times I think sexual abuse, most women, and I don't even know if this is true, but this is what I believe, this thought that like most women would turn away from it. How come I desired promiscuity? It didn't make sense, you know? And so basically I just went towards it. And so I was hanging out with these guys that I had no business hanging out with, and really inappropriate things were happening regularly, and I thrived on it. I thrived on it because I thought that it meant that that I was lovable, you know? So I stole this car, and my mom wanted to find me. I was missing. And the only way that they could find me is if they said, we're not even going to pursue her as a missing person. It hasn't even been 24 hours. But is there anything identifiable? And she said, well, yeah, she has this Mustang. She's in this vehicle. And so they said, well, if we press the charges, then we can put her back in a location where, you know, but you'd have to press charges. It's tough love, you know? So my mom did, and they found the vehicle, and they found me with someone who arguably would have killed me eventually. I do not doubt it. So I was saved then, and I was taken away. You know, I was taken away in handcuffs, and this time I was now on the verge of 17, and so they put me in an adult detention center. And I stayed there for months, and it was... I don't know, like it was just, You had rules and it was jail for a kid. And one day I remember being transported. It was time for my trial for taking the vehicle. And I was transported in this van. I was in cuffs and shackles, orange jumpsuit. My hair looked a mess. And we're in the van, we ride up. It's like this little, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like very secure. You go in this thing called I called it a cellevator. It was an elevator, but it was a cell. So you literally walk in the cell and then all of a sudden it moves up to the second level where the courthouse is. And I walk out and there's my mom. I hadn't seen her in months. And she's cleaned up and she looks great. And she's arguing on my defense. And the judge is standing there and he's just telling me, he's like, you're troubled. And your trouble, you know? And he just said, you have two options. And I'm going to talk to your mother about it. And he said, you can continue this life that you're leading. And he's like, right now you're not old enough to go to prison, but you're so close. And he said, or you can join the military. And, you know, and he said, you can do that because we could find your father. And if your father and your mother sign, then you can join the military at 17. And he said, but I'm going to warn you right now that if you do decide to do the military, he said, they can adjudicate even at 17 years old. You sign your life away, you're doing just that. They can, you know, punish you if you act up. And so you have to choose. And so I thought, man, that'd be great. You know, I'll join the military, get out of here, you know, get paid. And so I was hoping that would be the case. Well, he kind of deliberates with my mom a little bit, hits the gavel, says, no, I've decided you're going to stay. So I break down and I get back in this elevator and I'm sitting there for a few minutes and it doesn't move. It doesn't go anywhere. And then they call me back out. And so I guess it was just some huge ploy that they had gotten together to kind of give me tough love, you know, scared straight. And so they had already agreed that I would join the military and that I would probably do well in it. So I do. I joined the military at 17 years of age. And what's so comical is of all things, they signed me up as military police. So I just thought that was really funny. But I was already institutionalized. So I actually did very well in the military. I was military police almost 12 years. I loved following rules. But the one thing that never changed about me was this pursuit of attention, this pursuit of a promiscuous lifestyle. And so I go on to have hundreds of partners. That is what happened. I continuously, but on paper, in uniform, everything was so perfect. I was so black and white, rule follower, squared away, good to go, on time. I was already institutionalized. Now I was getting paid for it. It was great. It was so easy for me. And so I did so well, but I was hiding this other life. And I was, in every sense, in every command that I worked at, I always had this secret behind the scenes struggle with sexual addiction. And so I was into pornography, and I did things that I don't want to share details with, because when you come to know the Lord, you realize that there's certain things that you don't want others to stumble upon, you know? But the sin, we call the sin out. The sin is there. The actions were there. And it was not a big deal because I wasn't in a relationship until 2007 when I met my now Caleb and Ava's, my 11 and 10 year olds, their father, Brandon. Brandon and I, we dated a couple months. He was a Christian guy. He had a Christian sticker on his vehicle. I had Christian stickers on the back of my vehicle. And I can't even begin to tell you why, because I had nothing to do with Christ. He was not a part of my life at all in any way, shape, or form. But I think that was another, just one of those facades that I had on. It's all a blur. It was never genuine. It was never deep. And he saw this, and I pretended to be in wanting to, that manipulative, narcissistic Jezebel spirit. I wanted to pursue him. I wanted to be pursued by him. So I played up the Christian act. Within months of us dating, we hooked up. I mean, I seduced, I pursued. He would not have wanted that, ultimately, and we fell short. And we get pregnant with Caleb. So we decide the right thing to do is to get married. We get married. You know how you kind of fall in love with someone after you have children? It's like a different sort of bond. And so I was finally in a place where, wow, like, I'm not going to cheat on this man. I actually found a man who is loving and God-fearing, and I like him, and we have this baby now, and I love him, and I'm not going to cheat on him. So that was new for me. I was still very much pretending to be someone, and Brandon was who he was. Like, he just always was. He knew his identity in God. And so we have Caleb. In that love bubble of Caleb, we end up conceiving Ava. So now we've got back-to-back babies, everything's perfect, and then it's time for me to go back out to sea. And while I love the military, it is definitely the Navy in particular. When you are out to sea, that becomes your community, that becomes your earth. Those are the only people that exist. And so it's only natural that you're gonna have these God-given desires for someone that outside of marriage, you're not to toy with. You're not even to think about them. You're to run from them. But you have nowhere to run, out in the middle of the sea. And so once I returned to sea, I didn't have the Holy Spirit. I couldn't fight it. And so I just continued to entertain it. And then ultimately it ventured into me actively cheating on Brandon. And I really started to hate myself then for it, because I knew that he didn't deserve that, that he was a God-fearing, God-loving man, and that now I really had to get this under control. So I went to my command master chief. It's just like a higher position on the ship, who is kind of like the liaison for the enlisted and the officers. He's just kind of that buffer. And I said, and everyone knew and they loved my work ethic. I was a great police officer. I was the only one on the ship. Like, they all knew that I was just so squared away. So it kind of shocked him a little bit when I said along the lines of, Master Chief, you know how, like, if you have a problem with gambling, you probably shouldn't live in Vegas? And he was like, yeah. I was like, let's say that I have a problem gambling, and being in the Navy is like Vegas. And he had heard some rumors about people that I had potentially been with, and he asked me outright, and he said, are you telling me this is like a statement, MA1? And I said, yeah, I'll submit a voluntary statement, like, no later than close of business today. And he knew, he saw that I was hurting, he saw that there was an issue. So I didn't read myself my own rights, because that's, like, you know, unlawful, but I did make my own voluntary statement and I submitted it to the command. And so now this huge secret was out, and I couldn't deny it. And they kept it, obviously, between the upper echelon. Even now I look back and it was God's grace, because that could have been blasted all over Navy Times and the whole command would have been in trouble for something that just one person truly struggling with, was wrestling with. But by the grace of God, my commanding officer, whom I stood before when I was having non-judicial punishment, when I was being punished for my admission of all these unduly familiar relationships on board, he was a Christian. And I only knew that through passing over time. But he had grace on me, and I didn't lose my rank, but I certainly lost my position as the military police officer on board. I was sent to shore duty, and there I just kind of ended my contract. I finished out my time, and that would put me at 11 and a half years in, honorably discharged. I got out. Brandon, I tell my husband at the time, I'm struggling with this, and he wanted to forgive me. Over and over and over and over again, he wanted to forgive me. And I couldn't stand him staying with me, knowing what I had done. It did not make sense that he would be so graceful, because I didn't understand the Holy Spirit. I didn't have Jesus. So I just felt like I was manipulating him or something. It did not make sense that he was willing to forgive me. So we had the agreement that we would move to Arizona. My parents live in Tucson. My mom went on to remarry another stepfather, whom is a God-loving, God-fearing man too, thank the Lord. But they had moved to Arizona, and we wanted to kind of be near them. So the agreement was I would find a school to go to while here in Arizona. So back in 2006, I got out of the military, or 2013, I got out of the military. We moved here, and Brandon thought that we were going to start over. And I kind of did too, but I don't know, like I made all these empty promises to him. I just always manipulated men. I was always a man eater. I was always like, I never appreciated him for who he was. And so I just kind of went with it, like, oh yeah, you know, we'll start over when we move here. Well, we moved here and I started attending a school in Tempe, Arizona, an hour north. And it was with like life coaching, and innocent enough, you know, it seems innocent enough. I'm going to help people. I'm going to coach them because I was a police officer. I'll just help people with getting their lives right. Well, that turned into holistic nutrition, which has its place in the world, right? Eating clean. But then you start to get into these conspiracy theories about how you can't trust the FDA and so on and so forth. And while I may or may not still very much agree with those things, it went into this deep, deep, deep rabbit hole where it was us versus them. And it hadn't yet revealed itself as good versus evil, but it was us versus them. So I loved the allure of this new age school that promoted self-love and self-care. And what was interesting was I started to participate in yoga. I started to participate in Reiki and all these body, they call it body work, like practices where you're using metaphysical energy and supernatural energy to heal and restore trauma from sexual abuse. And I mean, they were speaking my language and I was eating it up and I loved it. And to this day, there were things that, like hypnotherapy and all these different practices, that did give me some, whether temporary or not, gave me a sense of healing. I felt resolved. Things were resolved. I also practiced abstinence in the new age, and that was so new to me. And that was alluring because I felt like this must be good because it's the opposite of all the things that I've only ever been. I was abstinent. As I went deeper and deeper into these studies, it very quickly went from chemical to supernatural. I was invited to attend esoteric events where we would invite spirits to lay with. I mean, this is very real stuff. It sounds absurd, it sounds bizarre, it sounds reckless. But when you're eased into something and it starts with healing, you invite it in. You're okay with it. You entertain it. And so all the meanwhile that I'm doing all these studies, I'm gone all the time. I have week-long classes. Not only am I commuting an hour to and from, but the classes are all day long. Brandon is back home raising Caleb and Ava. He's that God-given, God-loving man is the reason that the kids are who they are today. They're incredible children. But while he's there, I'm off farting around with all this esoteric stuff, and I'm in deep. And it's putting a wedge between Brandon and I. And I decide that I'm gonna become some comedian and some author. And they told me everything I wanted to hear. I was very supported by that community, which made it even more difficult when later I would come to leave it, because they supported everything. They watched me cry and like move all this energy, you know, of negative things that had happened. They weren't appalled by my tally of people that I had been intimate with. Nothing. Everyone was so into their own story under this false sense of humility that they had compassion for everyone else. No one was, you couldn't offend anyone in that environment. There was no offense. Everything was tolerable. Nothing was a shock. And so I liked that. I wasn't the weird one anymore, you know? And so I started to see fruits, I mean, certainly not, they were supernatural fruits, but they were not holy. I saw fame and I saw fortune. I became endorsed by a number one New York Times bestselling author. I began to travel and speak. I was doing stand-up comedy. My book was getting out there. Then I was invited to speak in front of 500 people at a conference that's very well known in the New Age. I felt like this has got to be from God or whatever the supernatural is, because it's so lovely, right? Now I'm regularly practicing intimate moments in the evening with supernatural things. It was very real. It's so wrong, but it was so real, you know? And it felt right because it was what I needed. It was under this disguise of abstinence and you know, there's like yogic principles behind brahmacharya and like saving your vital energy. And it all sounds so good and pure. And so as I went deeper and deeper down that path, I was further and further away from Brandon. Brandon at this point is like, she's a lost cause. I don't know what to do. He's still waiting for me to get right. I don't. And I just go deeper down that path to the point where I move out. And I just say, I'm just going to live up here for now. And so I stay. I live in Tempe. I'm actively going to that school. Now I start teaching at that school. And it breaks my heart still because I love those people. I didn't love them when I was there. I love them when I came out of it, but they won't hear it. They won't hear it. Because it's among all the things that they tolerated, they wouldn't tolerate Jesus or questioning that there could be one way. That's a non, you don't go there. So as I'm getting deeper and deeper down this rabbit hole, I'm talking Bigfoot. I believed in unicorns. I mean, I was so gone. I was so gone, but I believed it because I was manifesting. I was given things from the God of this world, no doubt. I'd ask for it, it'd come. I'd document it, I have videos. I would say, I bet tomorrow I'll open the mail and there'll be some sort of blessing. And it was always prosperity, it was always financial, you know? And it would happen. So I'm thinking this must be real. So the further I get, then I'm asked to start teaching because I'm growing a following and everybody's seeing these sorts of success. I begin teaching there. And as I'm teaching, I don't know when or how it happened, but one day Caleb and Ava, their father Brandon ends up going on deployment. So they have to live with me in that house in Tempe for the latter half of their school year. And as they're living with me, one night, I told them to brush their teeth and Caleb refused to go into the room. And I asked him, like, why not, you know? Our house is covered in crystals and oils and it's blessed and we have angels and we have all these things, you know? I use my pendulum all the time. I was actively using a pendulum for everything, from what I wore to what I ate, to do readings. I mean, I was so immersed. I had all these entities that I was working with that were allowed in my life and in my home. And Caleb said that he was so afraid. And he said that there was something on my bed. And he said it was growling and it was darker than dark. I was just, I can't believe it, you know? So I sat him down. I tried to like tell him that everything was fine. I invite my friends over to do, you know, cleansing of the house, right? We're bringing out sage. And it seems like there's temporarily like some peace. It calms down. And I begin to question, like, wow, you know, maybe I should look up, maybe I'm channeling the wrong angels or something, right? Because there's this idea that we have these angels and we can talk to them and we're doing tarot and angel card readings all the time in my home. Because it's not tarot, right? It's like, oh, I don't know about that. You know, break out the Christian Ouija board or whatever, you know? I mean, we didn't have one at the time, although they're on the market now. But I'm like, oh, I don't know about the tarot or the Ouija, but I'll do angel cards. Same difference, you know? Satan doesn't come with pitchfork and horns. He comes as an angel of light. So I'm using these cards and I'm thinking, okay, you know, we just need to clear out this bad energy. It's just the vibration that I'm operating at. If I'm operating out of fear, these other entities are gonna, I'm gonna attract them because it was all law of attraction and the secret and all that. So I go to get my house cleaned by one of my friends who does all this poltergeist talking, you know, who knows. I look back now and I know it sounds silly, but this is still very real. It's silly, but it's real. And so I begin researching on my own and I'm looking up, okay, well, how do you differentiate between good evil and bad evil, you know, or good angels, bad angels, and so on and so forth. And everything always points back, if you go deep enough, it always points back to Lucifer. It always points back to Satan and Jesus and the existential crisis of, are you gonna choose Jesus or not? And so one day I'm driving home to drop off some stuff that I had of the kids because Brandon's with Caleb and Ava, and I'm on the 387. It's like this beautiful mountain on either side of you, desert area, go figure, the mountains, the desert. I'm driving down the 387 and I just said, capital T truth, because that's how I spoke in the New Age. Everything was capital U universe and Gus, God, universe, spirit, and capital T truth. I honestly thought that like aliens were gonna, I was so ready to just submit to that next level of fame and fortune, but I wanted the answers. And whatever it was gonna be, I was gonna submit to. And thank God that God answered that call and not Satan in that moment. But I asked, I was on the road and I just said, capital T truth, I wanna know you. I wanna know, just whatever it is, just tell me. And I am telling you right now that my whole entire body, I had to pull over the car, my whole entire body was filled with like compassion that was not my own. It was, deafening silence. It was like the loudest whisper you've ever heard in your life. It was like the warmest. It was God. It was Jesus. It was the Holy Spirit. And it's so funny because it's like he really does. He reveals himself to you. And even if I had never heard the name of Jesus, I don't doubt that I would have known that it was him. You cannot deny him once you have experienced him. It was him. And it was greater than any of the powers that I had summoned up until that point. And I was afraid in the best way possible. I don't know how to explain it. It was fear of the Lord. I knew he was holy, and I knew that he was righteous, and I knew that I was wretched, but I knew that he loved me. He was pursuing me. He revealed himself to me. And it was so humbling and exciting and terrifying. I don't even know how to explain it. But I knew he was real. And I knew in that moment, I was like so taken aback. I was so taken aback. And at that point, I had this following. And so, and we're all about exoteric, you know, metaphysical stuff. So I go to jump on YouTube and talk about it and say, you guys, Jesus is real. You guys, like, no, I know. Like, you see Jesus in your yoga nidra. And I'm like, no, I just met him. You guys, he's the real thing. Like, it's real. And it was not received well at all. I started to get threats that I was losing my mind. I mean, these are the people that had followed me all along when I channeled Bigfoot, when I channeled unicorns, all this fairy stuff that I believed, all of the manifesting of the secret. All those people who believed all that, the minute that I talked about Jesus Christ, they said that I was losing my mind. And then they said that they were going to take my kids away from me. I mean, I just got slammed. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And so there was like this, I just turned that off. I just thought, okay, well, everybody's kind of taking that very odd, but I knew something started stirring and I couldn't deny it. And I really couldn't care because I knew that what I experienced was real. I knew it. So then I continued home to where Brandon and the kids were. At this point, Brandon and I had already agreed that things would not be salvageable. I was still very much in the middle of all this chaos, and he had since started dating another young woman who, you know, he's gonna now marry in June, which is very exciting. God redeems all things. And it's just, I just knew I needed to do something biblically based. I knew that much. And it's not like the New Age refuted the Bible. They would cherry pick parts of it that they wanted. So I was like, okay, well, the Bible, I know that that's reference to Christ, so that's where I need to go. My daughter, Ava, who I was, you know, when I was dropping that stuff off, she happened to be having a play date with a friend. When her mom comes by from the play date, I just said, it was so awkward, I'm sure, but I was like, hey, Jaina, you know, great having Savannah over. And I said, hey, weird question. Are you a Christian? Like, I just kind of threw it out there, like, hey, are you a Christian? And she said, yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, do you do the church thing? She's like, yeah, I go to Life Point. So I was like, okay, well, now I know where to go. So then the next couple of Sundays, I would be at Life Point. And I was just sitting there, you know, on Sundays. And all the meanwhile, I'm still teaching at the school. And every couple days or so, I would ask someone at the school whether they were teaching Reiki or teaching yoga or teaching hypnotherapy. Like, hey, are you a Christian? To which I would almost always get the response, oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm Christian. I believe in Christ. Okay. To what degree? And some would say he was an enlightened man that had reached enlightenment and understood the Christ consciousness within all of us. Right? Some would say, oh yeah, he died for our sins and that's why we're good to go. We could do whatever we want. It's all good, you know? And so I had this, like, it was just so tough. And so it was the second Sunday that I'm at Life Point, and Pastor Nathan is speaking, and he says, you know, I'm really not one of those like love and light type of pastors. I'm more of a pain and suffering pastor. And it was like, boom. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to hear. I already had all the love and light. I already had the fame and fortune. Something was still missing. And I met the one and only, the Creator. And I was humbled and I was humiliated, but in a redeeming sort of opportunistic way. And so I knew that there was suffering. It's not all love and light. It's not all rainbows and butterflies. And so when he said that, I was like, oh man, this guy knows the God that I met. He knows the Jesus that I'm talking about. Not some enlightened yogi master, not some, you know, ascended master, one of nine in your Rolodex of religious figures that you pick and choose. No, no, he knows what I'm talking about. And so I felt comfortable talking to Pastor Nathan about the past and what I had been dealing with, and that I was like in this dichotomy of like, okay, man, I got people saying this is Jesus, but I met Jesus. I think you know him because you have this like light about you, but you also have this like humility about you. Like, I think this is where I'm supposed to be. So all the meanwhile, my now husband, Ryan, is attending where I'm teaching, and we're like ships passing in the night. It was so odd. He's coming in, and it made no sense. I taught the latter end of the program, all the marketing, because I had all that fame and fortune with the book and everything. So I taught social media. I was always the latter end of someone's program. But because Ryan was so into spoken word and stuff, he kind of got on our radar as we were creating this conference that we were going to put together. And I had invited him to speak on behalf of, like, what he was a subject matter expert on and just doing his spoken word. So here we are, we're crossing paths. And like, I kind of noticed he doesn't really care too much about the conference. And I'm over here, I'm so sidetracked, I'm teaching, but then I'm also kind of like trying to figure out this Jesus thing. And then one day, I don't even know how or when it happened, but it was, we had this moment where I was like, I mean, I still to this day don't even know how it happened, but conversations took place where he undoubtedly knew the same Jesus. And once I knew that, we could become friends and start talking about it. And here's the beauty of all of this, because God redeems all things. Ryan was not only this God-fearing, God-loving man who at the same time, like, it was like this, and then he was like, whoop. So then now here we're both leaving, because he's speaking life into me biblically. We're both kind of figuring it out. I'm asking him these deep questions like, yeah, but what about this? What about this? And he's like, well, I mean, because he was already a believer to some degree, you know, maybe not following, but certainly a believer. So he's answering my questions. We're both hightailing it out of there. The chains are like crazy though, man. They just kept on trying to get us back. They told Ryan he could have whatever he wanted. They told me, you know, like, are you sure you want to go this route? Are you sure you want to burn these bridges? These people have supported your success up until this point. But we just kept on. I mean, it was tough, man, but we made it out. And that whole time, do you know that Ryan was my friend? He didn't pursue me sexually, something that I had my whole life as an issue. He waited. And then he waited till we were married to be with me. That was the beginning of God already redeeming all things. I don't know if he sent Ryan there or if he sent me. I mean, I don't know. That's what he does, is he works all these miraculous things. And you look back and you go, oh, come on. You were in it then? You were pursuing me then? But that was the most shameful. That was the darkest. You were pursuing me then? And he was. It's just so beautiful. And so now, you fast forward, and Ryan and I have been, we went on a camping trip with LifePoint when we were dating. I mean, if you even call it that, we weren't going anywhere because he was just trying to honor me as a woman. We go to the camping trip and we got baptized together in the river. Then we get married by LifePoint. We go on to make great friends here who are true disciples, who put on baby showers for us and, you know, put our wedding together, like all these amazing things. We're celebrating life and all this good that God intended all along, you know? And then now Ryan ends up, he left Sweeha, he found a church or a school rather. He was going to Arizona Christian University. He just graduated. The men here have discipled him and mentored him. And then Rod comes alongside and mentors him. And now my husband is a prison minister. And now I, as broken and as wretched and as just promiscuous and rebellious and troubled as I was, I'm now married to a pastor. I'm a pastor's wife. And it makes no sense. It makes no sense. Because you do feel like you don't deserve that, or that it made no sense, but it's his grace in all of it. And it's not to say that I don't still always make mistakes. I always do. And so then I have to argue that part of me that says, oh, I'm not like the other women here at the church because they probably don't have this promiscuous past, or they probably don't struggle with sexual addiction, or they probably, you know, you do all those things that say, well, they're different from me. I can't be a pastor's wife. I'm not holy. I'm not righteous, you know? But he cleans you up and he makes you a new creation, and then you can be in his grace. And then you realize it's not about me at all. It's not about me at all. It was never about me. It's about glorifying him. It's what he did, because it's certainly nothing I did, you know? Nothing. I just got to the point where my kids were scared, and now they know our home is holy. They know the Holy Spirit's there. And I'll tell you what, too. It's so beautiful. All of our kids are different, and they're going to accept the Lord their own way. They're going to write their own testimonies, you know? But Caleb seeing that figure, I later went on to ask Ava if she had ever seen it too. And I had them separately draw what they saw. And eerily, it was, you know, the same. And it was horrific looking. But this is the coolest part, and I think this is the actual testimony, because all the from good to bad and not knowing Jesus, that's its own testimony, but you continue to have a testimony. What's even better is that the last 3 years, not only have I come to know the Lord, but beyond that, I've been reading His Word. And as you read His Word, you realize who He is and what He's capable of. That Jesus has hair that's white as snow and fire in His eyes and a double-edged sword for a mouth. He's not some pansy Jesus that the New Age depicts or that we, you know, He's comforter for sure. But He also is a warrior. He's the lion and He's won. And so when you start to fear and tremble in His presence, that's the beginning of wisdom. And what I realized was as we were reading the Old Testament and I was wrestling with, well, God, is this really who You are? You kill people who touch the Ark of the Covenant? You know, I mean, you have to read it in context, right? But you find out who He is, and then the blessings really start to happen because He gets deeper into your life and he reveals who He is. But the coolest thing ever happened with our children. The minute that we began to fear the Lord, we no longer feared the enemy. It was like a switch. It happened like that. We went from always worrying about what the enemy was doing to now just being like, oh, that's just the enemy. It's like you realize the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And then from that, now it's like, this is just the beginning. It's a glorious unfolding. So these last 3 years, it's so comical because Pastor Nathan and Christy, whom I went to all the time, saying, gosh, I'm like a young baby that wants to talk about Jesus all the time and I want to renounce the New Age and I want to do all these things. And they said, well, hey, even Paul, from Saul to Paul, right? Even Paul had to have a little hiatus. He had to mature and deepen, you know? And so, I don't know, I guess I'm realizing that these last 3 years, because it's been literally 3 years and 1 month since Pastor Nathan said that about fear and that he was more of a pain and suffering pastor. It's just so crazy because now it's been my 3 years, and perhaps I still have more years, I'm sure. It's a never-ending process of growing and learning, but it's just beginning. I thought the testimony was from rags to riches, but it doesn't end. Once you know Him, He just keeps, there's more testimonies. So with that, I just say, you know, to be continued, because there will be more that He will do. And it's not for me, it's nothing I've earned. It's solely to glorify Himself.
Thank you again for joining us on this episode of the Kingdom Lives Podcast. If you'd like to stay up to date with us, you can follow us on social media, Facebook at Kingdom Lives, Instagram at Kingdom.Lives. You can also follow our YouTube page, and you can visit us online at www.kingdomlives.com, where you can sign up for our blogs and check out video testimonies. Thank you again for joining us, and God bless.